Penguin Random House Audio presents The Case for Keto, Rethinking Weight Control and the Science and Practice of Low-Carb, High-Fat Eating by Gary Taubes. Read for you by Holter Graham. To Kitty and Larry. Our grand business undoubtedly is not to see what lies dimly at a distance, but to do what lies clearly at hand. An aphorism of Thomas Carlyle's embraced by William Osler as the basis of his practical philosophy of medicine. I thought, holy moly, this worked. Ashvi Bardwaj, a British physician, describing her realization that her patient had reversed type 2 diabetes merely by changing what she ate. The Case for Keto. Introduction. The Conflict. I'm not writing this book for the lean and healthy of the world, although I certainly believe they can benefit by reading it. I am writing it for those who fatten all too easily, who are drifting inexorably toward overweight, obesity, diabetes, and hypertension, or some combination of them, or who are already afflicted and are living at increased risk of heart disease, stroke, and, in fact, all chronic disease. And I'm writing it for their doctors. This book is a work of journalism masquerading as a self-help book. It's about the ongoing conflict between the conventional thinking on the nature of a healthy diet and its failure to make us healthy, about the difference between how we have been taught to eat to prevent chronic disease and how we may have to eat to return ourselves to health. Should we be eating to reduce our risk of future disease, or should we be eating to achieve and maintain a healthy weight? Are these one and the same? Since the 1950s, the world of nutrition and chronic disease has been divided on these questions into two major factions. One is represented by the voices of authority, assuring us that they know what it means to eat healthy, and that if we faithfully follow their advice, we will live longer and healthier lives. If we eat real food, perhaps mostly plants, and certainly in moderation, we will be maximizing our health. This advice goes along with the overwhelming consensus of opinion in the medical establishment that we get fat because we eat too much and exercise too little. Hence, the means of prevention, treatment, or cure, whether provided by the pharmaceutical industry or by our own power of will, is to tame our appetites. As I write this paragraph, the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology have just released their latest lifestyle guidelines. These health organizations recommend, as they have done for decades now, that those who are fat or diabetic should restrict their calories, eat less, particularly less saturated fat, and perhaps take up regular exercise, or exercise more regularly, if they want to avoid premature death from heart disease. It all seems eminently reasonable, yet it clearly doesn't work, at least not on a population-wide basis. It likely hasn't worked for you if you're listening to this audiobook. This thinking, though, has been accepted as dogma for 50 years and is disseminated ubiquitously, even as the prevalence of obesity in the United States has increased by over 250% and diabetes by almost 700%, a number that I believe should frankly scare us all silly. So the question is, as it has always been, is this thinking and advice simply wrong, or are we just not following it? The other faction, the heretics, make their claims very often in the context of what the experts dismiss as fad diet books. These books offer up a very different proposition from the conventional thinking on healthy eating. While the authorities are telling us that if we eat as they propose, we will prevent or delay the eventual onset of chronic disease and live longer and healthier by doing so, these diet book doctors are claiming to be able to reverse chronic disease, including obesity, rather than prevent it. We should try their approach, these books imply, and see if it works. Does it help us achieve and maintain both health and a healthier weight? If it does, we can reasonably assume that it will lead as well to a longer and healthier life. Heresy be damned. The authors of these books claim to have confidence that their approach works, but we don't have to accept their words on faith. Some of their advice is contradictory, so clearly it can't all work. But if we can take their advice and get healthier and leaner by doing so, then each of us can decide if the consensus of medical opinion is right for us, and perhaps at all. The authors of these books almost invariably started their careers as practicing physicians, and many still are. Almost invariably, they say they struggled with their own excess weight, but freed themselves from the conventional thinking long enough to delve into the research literature and seemingly solve the problem. They had what the journalist and best-selling author Malcolm Gladwell called in a 1998 New Yorker article in precisely this context, a conversion experience. They found a way to eat that made it easy to achieve a healthy weight and then to maintain it. Then they tried it on their patients, and it worked, or so they claimed, and they wrote books about it, and the books often became bestsellers. These books are commonly based on a single fundamental assumption, sometimes implicit, sometimes explicit. We get fat, not because we eat too much, but because we eat carbohydrate-rich foods and drink carbohydrate-rich beverages. The culprits specifically are sugars, grains, and starchy vegetables. For those who fatten easily, these carbohydrates are the reason they do. One powerful implication of these diet books is that obesity is caused not by eating too much, but by a hormonal imbalance in the body that eating these carbohydrate-rich foods triggers. It's a very different way of thinking about why we accumulate excess fat. It demands a very different approach to prevention and treatment. Many, if not most, of the popular best-selling diets of the past 40 years, Atkins, Keto, Paleo, South Beach, Ducon, Protein Power, Sugar Busters, Whole 30, Wheat Belly, and Grain Brain, are or at least include variations on this simple theme. Specific carbohydrate-rich foods create a hormonal milieu in the human body that works to trap calories as fat rather than burn them for fuel. At the very simplest level, if we want to avoid being fat or return to being relatively lean, we have to avoid these foods. They are quite literally fattening. Physicians now commonly refer to this way of eating as low-carbohydrate, high-fat, LCHF. At its extreme, it excludes virtually all carbohydrates other than those in green leafy vegetables and the tiny proportion in meat, and is technically known as ketogenic, hence keto for short. I'll typically refer to it as LCHF ketogenic eating to capture both concepts. The term has the great disadvantage of failing in any way to be catchy. It trips off no tongues. But it does have the advantage of being precise and inclusive in its meaning. When I began my journalistic investigation into the convergence of diet, obesity, and chronic disease 20 years ago, perhaps a few dozen physicians in the world were openly prescribing LCHF ketogenic eating to their patients. Today, this philosophy and dietary prescription have been embraced by thousands of physicians, if not a few tens of thousands, more every day, for very simple reasons. Footnote: in Canada alone, a Facebook group for women physicians on LCHF ketogenic eating had over 3,800 members as of September 2019. They are working on the front lines of the obesity and diabetes epidemics. They have a professional stake in seeing obesity and diabetes addressed correctly and reversed, if at all possible, by healthy dietary approaches. They do not have the luxury to treat their patients by offering them speculative, however well-accepted, hypotheses about the nature of a diet that might, according to statistical assessments, prevent heart attacks. Their patients are sick, and the goal of these physicians is to make them healthy. Over the course of their careers, These doctors have seen their waiting rooms.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?